Look at your mic. Now back at me. Now back to your mic. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me, but he can at least hack like me if he were to ditch his crappy text editor and switch to Vim. That's right, Mike Saunders is not here today. Instead, I'm back as some sort of guest podcast editor person. I am, of course, Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And this is Tux Radar Podcast Season 2, Episode 22. In the podcast today, we have news. Novell has been acquired by a company no one's heard of. We have an amazing kernel line patch that could bring massive improvements, apparently, only 200 lines of code. And Fedora is following Ubuntu to switch to Wayland. Of course, we have our regular sections, You Dare Us. The challenge last week was, well, I don't know, I wasn't here.
It was something, coming up with a new name for the GIMP.
A new, better name.
Which we spent 2 weeks GIMP. Thinking about.
That explains all the podcast comments, yes. Because they were really strange. And our hot seat and our open ballot. Does a lack of games hold Linux back? Don't forget, you can subscribe to Linux Format and give us little money to buy little sweeties with and little beeries with by going to tuxradio.com/subscribe.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul.
You missed me, haven't you?
We have missed you. We've all missed you.
Well, is it Dylan C missed
Dylan
me as well?
C.
Thanks, Dylan.
Dylan C missed Paul. He said, "Come back, Paul. I think the podcast was still fairly good, considering Paul was missing."
Only fairly good, though, is it? Was it? Is it a slip from awesome,
I know,
down to insanely great, down through, you know, quite excellent, all the way down to fairly good?
We're just going to have to get used to mediocrity now.
I am going away, definitely, listeners, don't worry.
We're
going
to plumb new levels of meh.
And disorganisation, which is a good reason to start with the news.
Yes.
The news, massive news, actually. Earth-shattering news if you use OpenSUSE, because Novell has been acquired in what sounds like some kind of William Gibson-esque postmodernist corporation-dominated future by a company called Attachmate Corporation. They paid, or they're going to pay, $2.2 billion. We need Mike to say that, really, for Novell. Attachmate, after having quickly Googled them up, started life in 1982 as a terminal emulator vendor. And it's still a big part of their company. It's still half of what they do. The other half of what they do is something equally secretive, which is service systems and security management software. They're a private company, so we don't know how much money they make. We don't know where the money comes from. We don't know if they've got a partner involved in the main part of the sale.
Basically, it sounds like a massive patent troll. It allegedly.
Yes, because we mustn't forget that Novell owns a lot of Unix IP, and Unix is becoming a very big thing these days, not just in Linux, OS X. And more interestingly, is that part of the assets of Novell have gone to a company called CPTN Holdings LLC, which has, and this is the word used in the Novell press release, is a consortium that has been organized by Microsoft Corporation. And they're paying $450 million for certain assets and intellectual property that Novell currently held. And we don't know any more than that, in reality. There hasn't been any more information given on what it is that Microsoft's organized committee is buying. But it's a good guess it'll be maybe Unix IP. More interestingly, Novell was going to be bought out by VMware. Microsoft has got a lot invested in its future in the cloud with its Azure platform. VMware most likely would have used SUSE as its bundled OS with its own cloud operating systems. So actually buying Novell kills two birds with one stone. VMware is its biggest competitor in the cloud market. It dominates the market, makes an awful lot of money from the market. So in this strike, Microsoft may have, and we don't know, taken a big part of Unix IP, a lot of Linux IP, and at the same time, trumped VMware from getting an OS it can bundle with its cloud.
I think there are two ways we can read this. Well, possibly more than two, but I can think of two immediately. Firstly, $400 million, 450.
Yeah, 450.
It's a huge amount of cash, right? You don't pay that for something like Amazon's one-click purchase patent, right? These are real serious bits of IP, which would tell me that it's you know, core Linux stuff slash core Mac stuff too, because I don't think Linux is seen as a major competitor anymore to Windows stuff, with the iPad and iPhone stuff taking off. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way is saying, well, maybe actually MS are just buying out the insane contract they have with Novell. I mean, they have to buy, was it a quarter of... I think I'm a million, quarter billion, how many? A lot of vouchers to sell Linux to their customers as part of some sort of royalty exchange agreement. So that may all have been bought out, perhaps. So it could be that way instead, which is much, much, much happier result. You know, they just basically got out the contract, basically.
Yes, but none of us really understood what that was about. Some kind of patent indemnity.
Yeah,
some
in exchange, you had to buy a lot. I forget how many it is.
It was, I can't remember either.
Millions of dollars.
It was hundreds of millions.
Yeah, it was definitely hundreds of millions of vouchers to sell Linux to their customers, which MS weren't happy about. So maybe they just bought that out.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm not sure how long the top flight SUSE hackers will remain.
Yeah. Yeah. And SUSE users. I mean, there's a lot of corporate SUSE users who would have used that indemnity. And in fact, there were stories at the time about people, you know, jumping to Novell for that very reason. How are they going to feel? There is a Attachmate have said that they intend to split Novell into... Novell, presumably for its window emulation, I mean X-Window terminal emulation expertise, and SUSE to keep the distribution stuff different. But it's easy to say, it's too early to say, but also these press releases are very, very carefully worded to not give anything away. And this is some underground movement that are... It's obviously very important to some people, and we can't only glimpse at it.
I'm not quite sure why the press release said Microsoft didn't have to.
Yes, yes. What's the point in secretly organising some kind of consortium and calling it CPTN Holdings LLC?
What could CPTN stand for?
That's people thinking it'll stand for someone's name, you know, something quite benign, but it's not.
So, yes, and also there's the word perfect lawsuit. So Microsoft gets to close that too, presumably. So big news, but there's not all that much we can say about it. Something that we can say a bit more about and its effect on our desktops is a 230-line kernel patch, which I think the idea was originally by Linus Torvalds, but Mike Galbraith is the guy who implemented the patch to make small changes to the scheduler. I don't really understand it, but I think it splits scheduling across the old virtual terminals that we've all got running in the background. And as a result, in tests done by Mike, he says the latency, which is the time switching between tasks, drops by over 10 times. And the average latency on desktop applications is about 60 times less than the current latency, which everybody admits, and Linus in particular, he calls it a killer feature, will make a great big difference on the desktop for 233 lines of code, which is, firstly, it's quite shocking that only 230 lines of code can make such a big difference in the kernel.
Quite shocking. It's disgusting.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah.
How have they managed to do this?
Well, yeah, how badly organized is designed is the kernel?
Have we got some sacked OpenOffice.org developers
adding lines and then just removing them?
Yeah. It does sound like when OpenOffice.org made its huge, huge speed increases. We're like, what? How?
So anti-aliasing took away 500,000 lines.
So anyway, it's great news. We'll all get CPU upgrades as a result for free.
It's quite unusual to see Linus coming out and unequivocally saying, this is awesome, this is really cool.
Yes, he says it's a real improvement, in quotes, which Linus never says anything like that. So well done.
It was dampened slightly by the fact that a Red Hat engineer posted for follow-up saying, actually, just typing these four bash things and two commands does the same thing.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Hmm. We could post it.
We should have to try it out. Yeah.
We'll try it out. It says it works fine. But Torvalds is committing the patch anyway because, firstly, it means it's on by default, done, doesn't have been required. Secondly, it means bash isn't required either.
Yeah.
So it can go away and still work.
Was the Red Hat guy taking the same logic from the patch and applying it to the command line, or is it just a well known?
It just creates a new group and moves it around a little bit.
It's
really difficult.
Just so shift the schedule.
Already then.
It doesn't take long.
And I think finally, will say that Fedora's graphics wizzos on their mailing list have said that they may also move to Wayland. We didn't discuss Wayland particularly in the last episode, but it's in the next issue of Linux Format.
Every time you say Wayland, I want to say add the word Yutani to the end.
Corporation.
Wayland is the X11 X Windows replacement for Linux that does away with all of the cruft that we've got used to over the years and replaces it with the super smooth, shiny.
Well, by cruft, you actually meaning you're not going to miss having networked it.
I did get it to work once, but
XMCP. Yeah, great stuff.
It is, but VNC is just so much easier to use.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It means that the graphics rendering is closer to the hardware, effectively making things more efficient and more eye candy, easier to use. And it's one thing for Ubuntu to say that they're going to switch to Wayland, they're making big changes, but I think for a distribution to say it's intending to move to, for a distribution like Fedora, it's a big deal. And it might mean the beginning of the end of X11.
Does that mean is it still going to be backwards compatible with all those really old 80s mainframes and stuff?
Well, the thing is, you can run an X11 on top of Wayland.
Oh, right.
So I don't know if there's going to be some kind of a disadvantage to that, but it you'll still have compatibility, but apps will need to be rewritten slightly.
It's exactly the same thing Mac OS X did years ago, basically. A new desktop with X as a front end to it on top of it if you want it, optionally.
Well, not invented here, then.
No. Although, we have to say, ahead of time, if you do ever plan to fork Wayland, do call it Yutani. That's the best possible fork name for it.
But yeah, it's over 6 months away. They've said it might make it in some kind of state into Fedora 15, but it won't be the main environment before then. So maybe a year from now.
Is it going to 11.04 standard or something?
Yeah, that's what Mark Shuttleworth has said.
Wow. Ubuntu cutting edge shocker.
They're saying lots of brave things like that. What else are they saying? Like they're going to move to. Well, Mark has said that they'd like to move to daily. Updates, rather daily rolling updates to the distribution rather than 6 monthly updates, which is something I've watched Mark Shuttleworth talk about at the Academy conference and try and convince K developers to move to, because he says it's such a great thing. But obviously, and it is a great thing in lots of different ways, lots of publicity generated for Ubuntu whenever there's a new release.
If there's publicity every day, it's not publicity anymore. It's just white noise.
I imagine there'll be some kind of cutoff point, and they'll say, "This is Ubuntu 2012."
It's not going to be.
They'll run through
the
alphabet really quickly as well.
You know, when they get hold the front page, GNOME 2.30.1.9 has been released every day. It's irrelevant. Firefox 4 just landed. We'll get some publicity still.
They'll have to. We've talked about something similar before, haven't we?
Yes,
they'll just have to create.
It's an awesome idea.
Yeah, it is a good idea because it's a pain upgrading your distribution every 6 months or so. We do it more frequently than that. If we could just get all the latest packages now, thank you. That would be great. So it's a good idea. It might be another way for Ubuntu to differentiate itself from the crowd, but they've got quite a few of those already now. It's going to be good.
Won't it mean a lot of work for Mint and all the Ubuntu derivatives? Because at the moment they've got 6 months to catch up. They've got a stable base to build on. But if that's going to be moving all the time,
it will mean extra work for them. If they probably won't change their strategy, but packages that they change a lot, they're going to have to make similar changes whenever there's a new package updated through the Ubuntu repositories. So
also there is Mint Debian now, which takes Ubuntu out of the equation entirely.
Yeah.
Mint Debian. That sounds like original Ubuntu.
and isn't hated, apparently, by the Ubuntu haters.
What about the Debian people? Do they still hate it?
Making our distro popular.
Okay, and that was the news.
And now it's time for You Dare Us, although this time we'll call it You Dare Them.
And we're not very scared.
Because I'm not actually involved in this. I wasn't here last time.
Yeah, we just told Paul what it was, in fact.
Yes. So how about we talk to Brave Andrew, who has been dared to think of a new alternative, presumably better name for the GIMP.
A better name for the GIMP? I think Dave. That's an awesome name. I also quite like... I thought of GNU Paint, but then that sounds really childish. That sounds like you're daubing effects on. So I guess Free Photo Tools GUI.
2000.
Yes.
Utali.
We haven't given this much thought, I must admit. I've just thought of one that's Ginge. Ginge is not Ginge.
But then what does Ginge stand for? No. That could stand for Ginge is not Gimp.
Yes, it could do. Yeah, there's the clever bit.
in your face, herd hackers, here's another double recursive acronym.
Well, it could be triple, couldn't it? You could beat them at it. Guinness World Record for this.
I love recursive acronyms.
I hate them.
There are multiple great names suggested. I'm going to nick one from Pinball Wizard. I think he's got the best one. Photographic image shaping software to accompany K album excellently. I will leave you to figure out the initialism acronym of that by yourself. We also have Peacock with a capital C from Anonymous Penguin, sadly. Photo G or Photog, apparently he's short for photographer in some parts of the colonies. And Francium Duck, Photogonop. It's all right.
Photogonop.
Better than Ginge.
We have to actually think about a name that Effie would find reasonable, because he's the kind of guy that we need to convince to start using the GIMP.
El Gimpo.
That brings all kinds of terrible images into my head.
La Gimperia.
Viva la Gimp, cabrones.
Well, following that distro you reviewed ages ago, the Spanish one, can we have like Picasso?
Yeah. Oh, and call it something like Hogarth or...
Yeah, exactly. Some sort of name rings a bell to Spanish
audience. Dali. Like,
Dali, there you go.
That sounds rubbish. That sounds Gnarly. Like I'm going to scan a photo in it, and then it's just all going to like start melting and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
You click on a certain point in the canvas, and all kinds of colours and things start.
I'm going to dream that like there are loads of ants eating my stomach, and they've all got the face of my mother and other things.
Gaudy. Gaudi.
Yeah.
So, the question...
Gaudi.
Can you think of a worse name for the GIMP?
Ginge was pretty close.
that's the magic of the GIMP. There are very few names worse than GIMP. What are you doing? I'm just powering up GIMP.
What are you playing with?
Yeah. I'm just GIMPing up these pictures of your wedding.
Yes.
But G-Scrot, obviously, takes the biscuit for me.
G-Scrot is actually a legitimate bad name, yeah. It's still terrible. Fortunately, they realised that and call it Shutter, which is a good name, an example of a good name. That's a good rebrand. So, why can't the GIMP have the same?
Free photo tools. Photo tools. I'm going to call it Photo Tools.
It possibly already is called Photo Tools in some versions of the menu, where they have like the description followed by the name, or just a description.
Just
like
the description.
Photo Editor.
Yes. Right, well, this was a particularly rubbish You Dare Us.
I wasn't around.
No,
sorry.
I know. I think we'll blame Mike because he's not here.
This Dylan C is weeping into his earphones.
And we haven't thought of a challenge for our next episode, but I've just thought of one because the next episode falls on a time when there's a really tight deadline.
Cool.
So I'm suggesting it should be recording the next podcast within 7 days of when it should be recording next time.
That's a cop-out.
Well, yeah.
A dirty, dirty cop-out.
It is. It's an awful cop-out. This is the kind of thing that happens when we're left to our own free will.
How about You Dare Us? Have we done this one already? How about You Dare Us? We all go away and try a different desktop for 2 weeks, by which I mean either Windows or Mac or BSD. And then report back and describe what amazing things we'd learn from that.
Okay, not a Linux desktop.
Well, you can use Linux as well to get your work done. But generally speaking, you have to have at least tried Windows/Mac for 2 weeks.
Okay.
To report back and say what great improvements you would introduce into Linux based on those desktops. And be positive.
You can say that because you probably won't be here.
Correct. Well, I was thinking of saying we should all go and wrestle alligators for 2 weeks.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Paul.
And with such brave dares for our daring darers, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the hot seat with Graham, when we spin the wheel, it'll be a big surprise. And of course, our open ballot, led by Andrew, does a lack of games hold Linux back? Let's face it, the answer's yes.
Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun!
Right, it's the hot seat, it's me, it's totally against convention. Woo-hoo. I need someone to introduce me, and we need to see what's on the wheel. What is on the wheel?
In the hot seat, it's Graham.
That's better. Thank you. Thanks.
Insanely good.
Well, in the upper right quadrant, we have K Album.
Oh, yes.
That's what I'm hoping for.
We were just talking about that.
Actually, could we remove one of the K Albums and put G Scott on there, please? Would that be all right?
Wayland. Wayland's up there.
We've got Ginge.
Oh, it's behind your head. Sorry.
We've not really spoken about that too much.
Unity. And Grub. I thought we agreed to get rid of Grub because it's never going to land on Grub.
It keeps appearing back there every night.
It's Scrub 2 now.
I take it away, it comes back. It's like those statues that cry blood of Mary, you know? It's like that. It's an ancient relic.
And there are lots of other things that are printed in too small a courier font for me to see.
Yeah. Well, let's give it a spin. I need some time to get up because my legs are still achy from playing football on Monday.
Oh, Phil's going to have a run-up.
Oh, yeah.
And Andrew was the goalie.
It's going around, it's going around. Is it stopping?
Nobody knows.
Hey, what's that say?
That's a G. It's Grub. No, it's not. It's looks like Magia or something.
Oh,
Magia.
Oh, Magia.
Majua.
Oh, right. Okay.
We need a map file.
Yeah, we need whoever's in charge of that. Okay.
I can. My name's Graham Morrison. I pronounce Magia as what the hell?
Okay.
Three, two, and go.
Okay, so this is a Linux distribution from France. It was originally Mandrake Linux, which was created by the wonderful Gal Duval in the 1990s. It is an incredibly popular Linux distribution. It was my favorite distribution for a long time because it was very easy to use. It used RPMs. It was based on Red Hat. I will stop patronizing the French. It was great distribution. Used the KDE desktop, which is probably the same reason why I use KDE to this day. And it went from Mandrake to Mandriva when Gail was also forced out of the company. He was made redundant, but he didn't want to go because he posted a very angry blog post about it. But he did go on to create Ulteo, which is now doing a lot better than Mandrake Soft, which has now gone bust and is in liquidation. And the distribution itself has forked into Magia, which is now a community-developed version of the Mandrake distribution.
So, those last 3 seconds, Majir is a community developed fork of the Mandrake distribution. That's it. That's what you said.
That was rubbish. You failed. Honestly, the first time.
Okay, sorry.
Well, it's interesting, really, because Mandrake wasn't an awesome name. And they made it worse by calling it Mandriva/Mandriver.
Mandriver.
Yeah, that was the Connectiva merge,
wasn't
it?
It was, yeah. And now they made it even worse by calling it Magia, which means version 4 is going to be called Magimp. Or something like, exactly. Could be anything. It's going to be awful, we know that for sure.
There's an alpha version due out before the end of the year.
Oh, great.
Interestingly.
Fantastic. Yeah. That means they've finished choosing their board then, haven't they?
They've changed all the colours.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you say alpha in French, Graham?
Alpha.
Bien.
Ce n'est pas parfait.
Right, it's now time for our open ballot. No sooner had we posted this than we had literally 39 responses to the question. But what is the question? I should tell you what the question was first. The question was, does a lack of games hold Linux back? We're not talking about things like Super Tux Cart.
Crack Attack.
Gnome Tris. We mean the big AAA titles that people like me don't even know because it's been ages since I've played games. World of, not
Crack
World
Attack
of Warcraft.
Is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good, but it's not. We're talking about the big.
It's a serious game.
Assassin's Creed.
In fact, listen, if you can beat me at Crack Attack, you can take my place at the podcast.
Gears of War. What's that? Total Warcraft? What are the kids into these days?
Pokemons.
Yes.
Medal of Honor.
That's the one, Medal of Honor, stuff like that. So we don't have that for Linux.
No, we don't. I used to be really into PC gaming, and it was very important. I was into racing sims and games like Bioshock. It was actually the last decent game I played on my old gaming rig. But I must admit that since getting a games console, or the latest generation of games consoles plugged into the big television in a different room in a different part of the house. It isn't that important to me anymore. It might be because I'm a bit older, I don't know. But I also think PC gaming in general is on the wane, isn't it? With the exception being massive multiplayer online games. So I don't think it is that important anymore, is my answer.
Well, obviously I don't think it's important because I really struggle to think of anything, you know, post-Sonic.
Also, there's a wonderful, there's a really brilliant renaissance in independent games being developed. I mean, in the magazine, we've looked at some fantastic ones, and they're probably the games I'd like to play on any platform. Things like World of Goo, I can't remember them now.
Things like World of Goo.
Osmos. Darwinia is an old game, but that's still a great game. There was another one as well that's worth mentioning. I can't remember it, but it's the weird one that Alex reviewed in the next format. Oh,
Machinarium.
Yeah, yeah, that looked great. And they're just the kind of games I'd like to play if I was sat at my computer and had a bit of time to kill. Well, and there's native Linux versions of all of those.
Yes, although the Linux version of Osmos does cost 5 times more than the iPad version.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
But it's only $9.99.
Yeah, great.
That's not much to pay for somebody's hard work.
No, and it's many hours of entertainment.
It is. I think there are some great games on Linux, but they're so very little known about. And all the games I want to play are not on Linux. So I'm talking, you know, as you're right, you know, consoles are killing a lot of the market, but there's still some big games like Civilization V just came out. I'd love to play that.
Yeah, and there's an OS X version.
Yeah,
the
OS X version just came out. And if you buy it through Steam, you get the Windows and OS X version in the price. You can play whatever platform you like, but not Linux. And I made a point in the magazine 2 months ago saying, guys, you know, the Mac gaming platform is OpenGL plus OpenAL plus some SDL thrown in. It's really, really close to the Linux platform. If we had a few changes to our support, we could make a, you know, cross-compile Mac to Linux very easily. I got some flames back saying, oh, do you know? You've got no idea how hard it is to do this kind of thing. And you should just focus on Windows games instead. And actually, Windows is a massive DirectX stack. It's much, much harder.
Who was saying that? Who was saying the criticism?
The usual readers.
Right, right. Cool.
Not jobs.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, you're absolutely right.
It is, yeah. There's so many similarities between Mac OS X's implementation of gaming stuff and Linux's. It could be really, really easy.
I mean, we don't know to what extent Steam looked into providing Linux support, but my guess is that they had a pretty good look at whether it was feasible, because it would cost them very little in terms of what they've already ported to OS X for reasons you've just said. And they must have thought internally, look, we'd like to do it, but it's just infeasible. There are just too many different...
That's less feasible now that Ubuntu's going to switch to rolling releases. Because you can't even say, listen, you know, 10.04, long-term support, 5 years, we'll target that, get 5 years support, and take a chance with volume releases. You can't do that anymore, can you?
No. I guess part of the Steam client could be reporting back on what your system's capabilities are, and everything else is statically linked. So if you've got basic OpenGL support, OpenAL support, then they can push the binary to your computer.
Mm.
But it's not going to happen.
Well, as this is open ballot, we should probably look at what some of our...
Open the doors.
Some of our listeners, readers have been saying. I have to give the biggest shout-out to Messed Up Hair, who agrees with me. if I did ever want to start running the latest and greatest games, I would just buy a games console, he or she says. And we've pretty much touched on that.
If I ever do another Tux Radar remix song... Who agrees with me, haha, is going in there. The chorus.
Naturally. We're sort of split about 60-40 in this room. Obviously, that's an approximation because there's three of us.
who is it who agrees that it's holding back Linux?
What? Who agrees?
In this room.
Oh, no one. Oh, hang on. Actually, no. All right, then, fail. Sorry.
I think it's all about Linux. I think it is.
Yeah, Paul.
Okay.
I'm the 60 by biomass. I need to lose his belly.
So about that's more or less reflected in the comments. Because there are 39 of them, I can't read them all out. Although that is slightly misleading because Pengy Tai feels so strongly that he or she has commented twice. It would be great if the games companies could create games that run directly under Linux, but as the market is probably perceived as too small, it isn't worth their time to do it. But as you say, if they're doing it for Macs, then why not for Linux? We always say, please don't just post as Anonymous Penguin. and as if I need a unique name for, not verified, says, my friends hate it when I say, nope, can't play the latest Call of Duty, I'm running Linux. I know about Wine, but it has its limitations. Until the game developers start investing in Linux ports, this will always be a problem. What do you think to that? How do the latest games run under Wine?
Well, Wine is an option, but I mean, as an ex kind of PC gamer, where I overclock my graphics card on my CPU to get the best possible performance out of a game, so that I could ramp up the visual settings. I wouldn't be willing in the very late getting the latest games to run, such as Crysis 2 or something like that, by even a 10% drop in performance because I'm running it through Wine. It's all right if you want to carry on playing games that you love, you know, and now that hardware has got better, you can run some of those old Windows games perfectly. But I don't think it's the best option for running the latest PC games.
I would also say that when I said that Wayland adopts the macOS 10 model, it really does. It's OpenGL accelerated across the board, which means that if you do not get your basic graphics card running, Intel, NVIDIA, or ATI, with Wayland, if you don't get desktop up, then, you know, forget the games. Well, if you do get Wayland up, it means you've got full 3D acceleration working. You can play your games for a change. Because right now, it's really hit and miss. You know, I can get X up, but am I in Visa mode or in NVIDIA or what's the free one? Nuvo mode or who knows what? Will all games work? Who knows? Whereas with Wayland, at least, it's OpenGL pushing it. Mm. So it's going to work in 3D much more easily. They have to work on that. Because right now, if you have Compiz running, some games will work, some games won't work, which is wonderful.
Yeah. All those times we've launched GLX Gears to see what the frame rate is.
Oh, it's 20. It's something wrong.
Mohan has possibly the best comment we've ever seen on Tux Radar.
This is Mohan P. Ram. Who's awesome.
Well, Mohan says, I have no idea, as I am not a PC gamer, so the lack of gaming on Linux doesn't really wager into my computing at all.
Thanks, Mohan.
Awesome. Thanks. Back to the Daily Mail comments thread. Gwilym says, I can't stop playing OpenTTD. All my friends on Windows.
Yes!
Yes! All my friends on Windows also play it. I don't see why we need another game.
Props. You are absolutely right. Chris Sawyer is a genius.
Well, a contrary point from Hugh, who says, yes, of course it does. It would be absurd to suggest otherwise.
See?
So, right. In your face, everybody else. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about millions of people or even a few thousand. The simple fact is that there are plenty of people out there, myself included, who keep Windows around to play games.
You're right, Hugh.
Hugh is right. Also, Mohan is right. Everybody is right. That's the great thing about choice. William,
has no one said choice is good? It's good to have it hold back and not hold back.
I don't think I've not seen choice is good. Maybe I'm just not looking very hard. Zingy Yellow says Linux needs gamers because they tend to be the tech support in many households. I think he's right.
Well, we should be doing everything
we can. Kids play games. Kids can be bothered to read instruction manuals.
A lack of games hasn't really held OS X back, has it?
No, but they've got. You know, they've got their black turtlenecks and their lattes.
Well, they've been pushing games longer than you realise. You know, Blizzard games have always run on Macs.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, Apple were very, very close to buying Bungie, the Halo makers.
Well, yes, I know, yeah.
They announced Halo and said it's coming to Mac, and then it didn't. It got bought by Microsoft and released only on Xbox. But they were really, really close. They really push hard on games.
Yeah, and Steve Jobs has obviously always realised it was an important part of what they should be offering.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right. Maybe we should be lobbying harder for games companies.
Just because games look good.
Yeah.
Games make your desktop look good, basically.
And maybe they'd force distributions to standardise on at least creating a platform where games can run.
Steady on.
Yeah, I know. I've got to be careful.
Ooh, this person's comment... it's split over two pages on my printout, so let me just find out who it's from. Ah, Bob the Bob Bob, 1234, says even if Linux is technically, ethically, and morally superior, if it can't play the games, then it's not good enough. Wow, that's quite harsh.
No, but it's true. It is true. In 20 years' time, if Linux still cannot play games, people will still be dual booting. That's rubbish. That's really rubbish.
Yeah, but is that actually holding back people moving to Linux?
Well, Fairly Anonymous Penguin says, No, Linux is... the lack of games is not holding back Linux, as Minecraft works for Linux. Minecraft is ace. And
Minecraft is weird.
It is weird, but don't you see, even though it's one weird, unique game, for once, someone will say, you know, hey, Graham, do you play Minecraft? You don't have to say, no, I've got Linux.
Yeah.
And cry on the inside.
You are right. It used to be really important.
Say it again.
You are right.
Again.
You are right. It did used to be really important. I think maybe what it is, I don't play that many PC games anymore. If I did play PC games, it would be important to me. But, you know, the DRM in Bioshock was the fallout from that really, really hurt. That's the last game I bought for the PC.
You should play OpenTTD.
It sounds like I really should.
Mm. Or Osmos. That's cool. Really.
I did play Gran Turismo last night, and that was a bit rubbish.
Was that on a Windows machine?
On a PlayStation console.
Well, there we have it then.
I'm right.
Finally, there's a really cunning, hilarious, insightful, and wise and well-balanced comment from Anonymous Penguin, but because he hasn't bothered to change his name, I'm not going to read it out.
And with such stark warnings for all Anonymous Penguins, we come to the end of our podcast. Somewhere in Bath, Mike is saying, "No, wait,
no, it's me!
One more thing."
We've turned our phones off so we can't even call.
No, sadly, Mike, we're ignoring you again. We're going straight to the end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes, such as they are, on the website. Please go ahead and flame us all you want to, because I'm not going to be here. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. One more thing. I've got one more thing.
No, you haven't.
I have. It's one more thing. Two more things. First of all, I mean, with the Ashes being played.
Hold on. You know something? I've got one thing. We didn't do Discovery of the Week.
Who made these notes?
It's all gone to fuck.
Yeah, discovered. I can watch them one more thing.
Look, we haven't really got time.
We've got
15 minutes.
That's fine. Some more time.
Okay.
So two more things. Come on.
Two more things. The Ashes are being played right now. Because it's on Sky and it's on really, really late at night. I don't know what the score is, but doubtless England will have thrashed the Aussies quite triumphantly. So a big, big shout out to you all over there.
Well, you're almost right.
Well, I don't know yet. That's part of the joy of live radio. And the other one I can't remember. Oh no, that was it. Dylan C says that we were fairly, was it fairly good? And that was without Paul. So if you give us feedback and work and tell us how good we are without Mike and with Paul, we'll be able to run that all into some sort of algebra and work out how good Mike and Paul actually are.
Well, it's like Mastermind. We can try without you one time. Try without Graham and see which one gets all the little black pegs and the little white pegs. Have you got one more thing, Graham?
No, I haven't.
Are you quite sure?
Yeah.
We haven't forgotten anything then.
No, we haven't forgotten anything. It went really smoothly and it's lasted the same normal length of time it normally does.
Well, I've got one more thing. Because whoever made these stupid podcast notes, and it wasn't me for a change, left off Discovery of the Week. Morons. So, just quickly, I've discovered...
Let's just leave it.
And with that, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget, you can see all the notes online once Graham writes them all. He may even post the 6-line bash style command line fix.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Because that'd be cool. You can try it for yourself. It's slightly longer instructions if you're on Ubuntu, but otherwise, it's very easy. And they will see you all in 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.